in India, it's still going strong, even though several Asian cultures have abolished it through different means. In India, people convert to Christianity and Islam to escape the dark side of Hinduism, which is the caste system. Because once you become a Muslim, for other Hindus and other Muslims itself, you become only a Muslim. You will be identified only as a Muslim. And no one will ever ask you, what's your caste?
Because you're a Muslim.
Because you're a Muslim. Among Muslims, you're all Muslims.
Hi, and welcome to Taboo with Mimi, the podcast that talks about anything and everything, really, that is taboo in this world. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No. But seriously, I go around the world because I'm a digital nomad, and I interview people from different cultures and ask them about their taboos. Why? Because it's time to talk about them. Some things will hopefully make you think. Others will maybe gross you out. But most things will be something you can relate to. So there you have it.
Welcome to Taboo with Mimi. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Taboo with Mimi. I am here today with Kartik. Did I pronounce it correctly?
You got it right.
Yeah, you say it. How would you say it?
My full name is Kartikeyan, but it's the name of a deity, so I don't want it that way. So I shortened it to Kartik. And the more informal way of calling it is like everybody, all my friends and mommy call me Karti.
Karti. Yeah. That's a cute nickname.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are you, Kartik?
Oh, that's a very philosophical question.
It
Who
is.
Am I? But for common vernacular, I'll maintain myself as I'm Karti. I'm from India. I'm a filmmaker and an entrepreneur.
Where from India?
Southernmost part of India, a state called Tamil Nadu. We speak the language Tamil. And the word Tamil Nadu literally means, Nadu means land. So land of the Tamils.
That's so cool. And it's so funny that I had two people on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
From India, from Chennai.
Chennai.
That speak Tamil. Cool. And I think you're also a little bit of an exception, because I usually try to do taboos from all over the world.
True.
Not to repeat the same countries, but I think this conversation is going to be really interesting. So that's why I wanted to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because I think we know a lot about India.
True.
And it is a very Europe-centric worldview, obviously.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the way we see and study India is through colonialism for the most part. Some people go there for yoga. I personally feel closer to India because of yoga.
Yeah, your Instagram profile calls yourself a yogi or yogini or something.
Yeah, a lot of the chants are in Hindi.
The chants are mostly in Sanskrit.
They're in Sanskrit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true. But isn't Hindi coming from Sanskrit?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You're right about that. And Hindi is spoken by majority of the people in India, especially the northern part of India speaks Hindi. Even though they have a mother language themselves, they all speak this common language, Hindi. But in my state, is one exception where 95% of people will not speak Hindi or have some kind of resistance towards learning that language. Personally, I don't feel that there has to be any kind of resistance. But our people, meaning the people in Tamil Nadu, feel that this language has been imposed on us. And it's going to do more harm than good.
Mm.
So there is a little bit of resistance in learning that language. The rest of India, in schools, the students learn three languages. But in my state, we learn only two, which is Tamil and English.
I think this is really interesting because English is the language of colonialism.
True.
And in India, the official language is Hindi, technically, or is English?
Not at all true. That's incorrect. But most people believe that, even Indian people, if you watch YouTube videos, they will tell Hindi is the
official language,
which it is not. If you Googled it, India has like hundreds and hundreds of languages. And the official language is not Hindi at all. It's like a myth, which most people believe.
What is the official language
in India? There is none. English. And then I think all states are divided based on language in India. Each state speaks their own languages. And the state government's official language will be their own state's language. And English, but still, I definitely know for a fact that Hindi is not the official language of India.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
That makes sense because India is huge.
Yes.
1.5 billion.
True.
Obviously, not everybody speaks the same language, but I feel like it's interesting because if you go to different states in India, the common language for you guys is English.
True, very true. And I prefer to keep it that way.
Why?
Because no one is imposing English on us. We learn English for our own benefit, which is to study math, science, and physics. Of course, we don't even learn that in my own mother tongue. If I learn English, I have access to math, science, and physics. If I learn Hindi, I do not have access to any kind of literature that I would want to read. It is a fairly new language. It does not have a huge history. There is not great thoughts that are being communicated in that particular language. It was a language that came about because many people... So if you looked at the northern part of India, who predominantly speak the language Hindi, their mother tongues are closely related to Hindi because Hindi is a market language where people who spoke different languages needed a common language to communicate to sell products to each other. So that's how the whole language came about.
For trade.
For trade, exactly. And there is no other reason for that particular language to exist. So yeah. For me, I don't personally have any takeaway at all from Hindi.
That is very interesting. Would you, because I get your point, but English, in my eyes, is also the language of the colonizers that
True.
Took over your land for so long.
True.
Whether Hindi is definitely not the language from your part of the country, but it's still in the area.
True.
And then it's interesting you would choose to have that language. And it's not really a choice, is it?
True.
Versus a language that is maybe more, but maybe not. Because how different is Tamil from Hindi?
Oh, entirely different. Entirely different.
Yeah.
But I usually tell people that we can learn a language's history and the etymology through the etymology of their words. If you study the words mom and dad in Hindi and Tamil, mm-hmm. you would know these two languages are exactly opposites. Because I'll tell the words itself. I call mommy as mummy or me, but technically the word is amma, which starts with the word, the sound, and ends with ma. If you looked at Sanskrit, the word for mother is Mata, which starts with Ma and ends with A. So exactly opposite. Similarly for father, I call my dad Appa. It starts with A and ends with Pa. But if you looked at Sanskrit, the word is Pita, which starts with Pa and ends with A. If you moved further west, you'll get father, padre in Spanish, for all related to Sanskrit-oriented languages.
Wow.
And the other languages, southern languages, exactly the opposite, where the sound ends with ma and pa, does not start with that. So they're exactly opposite. And interestingly, South Koreans call their mommy and daddy as omma and oppa. Exactly the same
word.
South Koreans?
I think Dutch people the same. To say grandparents, I think it's oma and oppa or something like that. It's
cool.
Very similar.
Cool. That's very new to me. I'm going to read up on that tonight.
Yeah, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Super interesting. My next question for you, how was it to grow up in India? Are you from a big city?
So the capital city is called Chennai.
Yes, which is a big city.
Yeah, which is a big city. And obviously the economy of the capital city will be the number one in their states and countries.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's number two.
Wow.
And it's economically very well developed.
Yeah.
My dialect of Tamil is dubbed to be the most respectable dialect because even we call kids with the sound Inga, the suffix Inga at the end of most words.
Why do you think it's that?
I have no clue. It's just the way the dialect grew. And that does not necessarily mean that people are the most nicest people. They don't kill, steal, or do any kind of non-altruistic things. But one more important thing about my dialect is that in the southernmost part of Tamil Nadu, I'm from South India,
mm-hmm.
and the southernmost part of Tamil Nadu, the district, southern districts of Tamil Nadu, there exists a certain kind of division where people who belong to different castes use different kind of dialects. Even though the dialect is known to be something, there's mild variations. Mm-hmm. Using those variations of how they address their parents, grandparents, people will know if somebody is from a wealthier social background or the so-called backward classes.
That's so interesting.
That is very interesting. But in my city, the dialect is unanimous for everybody.
And that's because why?
Again, that does not mean that we do not entertain thoughts about caste system. So Tamil Nadu and Kerala, I have much revere and respect towards Kerala. I would say equally or if not more towards Kerala because they are very progressive in their thoughts. Kerala is the
Kerala?
Neighboring state. Yeah.
It's a neighboring state.
It's a neighboring state.
What is the state of
my city borders Kerala.
Got it.
Yeah. and the people are much more progressive. 33% of them are Hindus, 33% are Muslims, 33% are Christians. That tells a lot. And they live in harmony. Things are not going to be picture perfect. And when you say harmony, 99% of the time, they are very nice people. They are very progressive. Dating is much more liberal because we can't fall in love after thinking about somebody's caste or religion. Mm-hmm. 66% are not going to belong to your religion. So the probability of falling in love with somebody who is not in your background mm-hmm. is higher. And these marriages do get happened.
Yeah, because from what I know, which is the stereotype of my idea of the caste in India, mm-hmm. is that if you are from a different caste, you cannot marry, right?
That is true, unfortunately, but it all depends on the level of education. How much education that you hold, and it's not about your own education only. Let's say I'm educated, but my parents aren't. That's not going to translate into much. If your parents are also educated, that's going to help you a lot, which is only 10 to 15% of the population.
Wow.
So I've got friends who are extremely wealthy, but still married within their castes. Very unfortunate.
Can we go a little bit into it? I know it's a very sensitive topic.
As deep as you would want to be.
So,
and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Why do you think it's a very sensitive topic in India?
That's what I've been asking myself for the past 6 years. It holds no value whatsoever. And this problem has not only existed in India, it's existed everywhere around the world. I'm going to get into that a little bit first before we move into India alone. Mm-hmm. So the samurai people were against intermarrying into other cultures at one point in time. So if you looked at the last names of certain people in England, they have names like Cook or some other caste names which depict a particular occupation that they may have traditionally performed. So, which is also the basis of caste system in India. Caste system originated based on what job they did. If you looked at the word smith, there are two different smiths, blacksmith and goldsmith. Blacksmith will be slightly more backward in economy, and goldsmith with me will be slightly better. We have exact equivalence here too.
Yeah.
So people who work with gold identify themselves with a particular caste name, and they enjoy much better social status than the other kind of smiths who work with wood and iron. So occupation is the basis of caste system. There is another system called Varna system, which is a very broader term to classify the entire caste system as the top being the self-proclaimed Brahmins to take the top of the pyramid, and then the Kshatriyas, who are the warriors, or how they call lords in the UK, and then the Vaishyas, who are tradesmen. Does not necessarily mean they were business people. They were just given the responsibility to supervise cattle and everything. And the last are the untouchables or slaves named Shudras.
Which makes me think, obviously, that we make such a big deal, quote-unquote, about the caste system in India, but actually, it's everywhere. Whether you define it that way or not, I feel like in some ways, this is everywhere. Before, when feudalism was around, there were slaves, mm-hmm. who were like the non-free people, mm-hmm. who could only marry within the non-free people, mm-hmm. right? And then there were different classes as well. And then we moved into today's world where de facto, people still marry within their wealth range, within the people of their circles, which are usually people who have the same interests and the same amount of money, because mm-hmm. those are the people that you have access to. Sometimes it happens that it overlaps. It's not as strict as mm-hmm. it used to be. But I think to a certain extent, it's just not called out that much.
So I'm going to start by saying the word caste itself comes from a Portuguese name, casta. So that does not mean that the caste system was imposed by the Portuguese. It's just an English word.
Okay.
I'm just trying to say that this kind of system has existed all throughout the world.
Right.
But at some point in time, the change has happened and it originated from within. In India, it's still going strong, even though several Asian cultures uh-huh. have abolished it through different means. In India, people convert to Christianity and Islam to escape the dark side of Hinduism, which is the caste system, because once you become a Muslim, for other Hindus and other Muslims itself, you become only a Muslim. You will be identified only as a Muslim, and no one will ever ask you what's your caste.
Because you're a Muslim.
Because you're a Muslim. Among Muslims, you're all Muslims. Of course, an extremely rich Muslim is not going to or may not ideally choose to marry within a lower income family. But still, no one will ask a Muslim what your caste is.
Do people still ask your caste is?
Oh, in Hinduism, yes, of course. Especially not all the time. So I did watch a TV show which is called You Are Me, which translates to Nia Nana in my language. It literally translates to You Are Me. In that debate show, HRs from different companies admitted that they tried to guess what a person's caste is and provided favors for them. The one other exemption in my country is that in my state, Tamil Nadu, the last name will not be the caste name of anybody. We have our parents' name or my dad's name as my last name. But if I were to be born in, say, the neighboring states, even the progressive state, Kerala, has not abolished carrying caste names in their names. So just by asking somebody's name, you could know their name.
The second
half, the last name is their caste name in 99% of Indian population, except for Tamil Nadu. In Tamil Nadu, you'll barely find a few thousand people who still have their caste name as their last name.
So interesting. So let's go over it a little bit. So the first caste, how do you call them, first, second, or higher or lower?
Oh, the higher and lower is a created concept by the priestly caste named Brahmins,
who
self-proclaimed themselves to be the top of the pyramid. They are the ones who held right to education. And there was a time, even after the independence, I think, just before independence, to become a doctor, you will have to learn Sanskrit, which is totally unrelated. Sanskrit is a liturgical language where only prayers and chants exist. Nobody speaks that language anymore. Mm-hmm. It was one of the conditions. And that language is more closer only to the Brahmins, so the others will find it difficult to learn. So that there is a head start for the Brahmins to get educated at first. And this entire system of Brahminism, it's much more sensitive and much more taboo in India, because they are the first accused to bring about or devise this whole system and keep it going. So they take the first hit. But I always tell, you need the brain and the hand. So people only accuse the Brahmins, but I would accuse two people. The one is the Brahmins, and the next is the Kshatriyas or the landlords. Because to get something done, you need both the brain and the hand. So the brains behind this whole system is the Brahmins, and the muscle is the wealthy landlord people who kept the system going for their own benefit so that they can plunder the wealth and resources, get free labor from the other castes who are lower than them. So if you Google the word Abraham, you'll obviously end up with the prophet named Abraham, who is the father of Judeo-Christian history. Mm-hmm. So what is the first letter of Abraham? A. If you took that A, if you removed it and put it at last, you'll get Brahmaha, which is the god of the Brahmins.
Wow.
And if you looked at Abraham's wife, her name is Sarah, right? If you looked at Brahma's consort / sisters, there's some kind of a confusion, but let's call her a consort. Her name is Saraswati. And this pyramid system has existed in Egypt. There is some kind of connection which people have to put two and two together. If you literally Googled Abraham, you will end up with the Judeo-Christian Abraham, the prophet.
Yeah.
If you remove the A and put it at the end, you will end up at the Brahmins. And one
which
more
were the priest people, by the way, which are true, the religious people
true,
as well.
True. Yeah. And also, one more connection, if you looked into the Jewish history, you will find the Pharaoh once ordered to kill all the male children or first children or something like that. And that's how Moses was born, right? Moses was the first son or something, and he was sent into the waters, who an Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter picked him up and raised him in royalty, and then he understood that he has Jewish history, and then he became the redeemer of the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story of Krishna.
Really?
Exactly the same story. So there is Krishna's uncle. His name is Kansa or something. I'm not very familiar. An astrologer or some kind of a foreteller tells him that if a male child is born, he will succeed to the throne. So kill all the male children. So him being a powerful king, orders to kill every first child. And at that time, his own sister is pregnant. His sister delivers the baby, or some kind of magical interexchange of womb transports Krishna into some other womb. And there is another character named Karna or Krishna. I get confused with this mythology myself, because I'm not very familiar with this story. But to escape the killing of the first child, they send the child away in a basket in a water, and somebody picks it up and raises the child to be royalty. So these stories match.
Were you born Hindu?
I was born a Hindu, but I will not die a Hindu, which is a statement I'm borrowing from Dr. Ambedkar, who is also from this so-called lower caste or underprivileged caste. But he's the one person who wrote the Constitution of India in entirety. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're all proud of. Mm-hmm. Because when he went to school, he was not allowed to drink water because he was not allowed to touch the tap of the water. So a security guard who might probably also belong to, if he's a security guard, he's got no social capital. So even though he's security guarding his lower caste, he was allowed to touch the tap of the water. So he has to wait for the security guard to open the tap so that he can fill the filling water and drink. And then he took the name Ambedkar is his last name. So the word Ambedkar or the name Ambedkar is a Brahmin surname. A Brahmin gave him his surname so that he will not be discriminated. And he took that name. Ambedkar took that name. He took a Brahmin wife. His first or the second wife was Brahmin. But he made no ideological compromise in fighting for the rights of the lower caste people.
That's really interesting. But what I was going to say was that I'm Jewish.
I know
culturally.
I saw your story, Instagram story.
No, it's because I was like, I think probably Judaism and Hinduism are the oldest religions.
True.
How old is Hinduism? Do you know?
Oh, I think it's one of the oldest. Definitely 5,000 years ago.
But
if to answer that question, we'll have to discuss something else too. There is no such thing called India, no such thing called Hindu. But there is something called India because it is a country and it exists. But it was once a collection of an archipelago, several different kingdoms, mm-hmm. all conquered together by British, mm-hmm. and it's now put together as one country. Okay. So if you looked at Europe, it comes from a deity's name called Europa. Europe comes from the word Europa, who is an ancient deity herself. Mm-hmm. So if you looked at one country in Europe, the distance to travel from Germany to its neighboring country will match with the distance to travel from
one state to the other.
We all speak different languages. Our foods are different. Even though Austrians and Germans speak the same language, they're entirely different.
Yeah.
And their food is similar, but they call it slightly differently.
Yeah.
The same goes with the people of Tamil Nadu and Kerala.
Yeah.
So it's culturally the same, but it's supposed to be several different countries, but put together as one. But let's leave India after this, and let's discuss Hinduism.
But I think this is really interesting, because like sometimes a lot of people don't know how different India is within the different states. Like we think like of India as like one big state, and then when you actually make that comparison with Europe, as you think as if Europe was like one big state.
Yeah, yeah, true.
With all these different people. Like,
I think that's because of social capital, and it's because of wealth that they mm-hmm. hold. At one point in time, there are certain minutes recorded by scribes in Roman Empire mm-hmm. who talked about the depletion of wealth because of Indian spices being imported into the country.
Yeah.
And if you looked at royalty from France or the UK, the ladies wore pearl necklaces, most of which came from India.
Yeah.
Because at that time, nobody had the knowledge or the technology to harvest these. These pearls are interlocked with, they exist within an oyster, which would open up only during a certain time of a moon phase, which was noticed by the Indians back then, and they used that knowledge to sell, which is not different from anything. So if a particular country comes up with with technology, that country is going to be economically forward and rule the world.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why the British and the British Empire conquer India, obviously.
True, for wealth, of course.
But I want to go back to the caste system. So mm-hmm. what caste are you from?
Oh, very unfortunately, I have a lot of blood in my hands. Do you see? My hands do not have any kind of anemia at all. It is because it's covered in blood. That's everything I'm going to say.
Okay.
But my dad is extremely educated. You'll never find him without a book.
Uh-huh.
And he had absolute disregard for these kind of things.
Uh-huh.
He was friends with everybody.
Yeah.
He was a banker, but I always tell he's a banker because I still think he's within me. If you looked at me, dark skin, round face, fuzzy hair, that's him. Yeah. Mad science, English, Tamil, that's him. But at the same time, United Nations gives this freedom to right to self-identification.
Mm-hmm.
So if I choose to identify myself with the lower caste, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to I understand where this question is coming from because we are discussing this topic. Mm-hmm. But if somebody asked this question in India, it's an entirely different thing. They have ulterior motives to ask that question. I will not dignify that question with an answer. Mm-hmm. So that's how strongly I feel about this. And this particular topic is what brought me into social awareness itself, because I was this self-indulgent person who wanted to go to New York, start his own hedge fund, trade, live the high life, but still a straight-edge person because I never identified with any kind of drugs or recreational drugs, or my kind of recreation was still hanging out with friends and different things, but that's a different story. But this person is entirely dead now. I don't know who this person is, but all my friends knew me as that kind of a person when I was in teenagers, when I was in school. But right now, I'm still with the same people, but they could tell the difference, like literally tell the difference, because I would not have known anything about the caste system at all. And the Tamil people went through genocide in Sri Lanka. In India, we are a powerful state. The southern states, literally four southern states, bring about majority of the money for the country. Mm-hmm. Tamil Nadu is one of those states. Literally the second state, we call GDP for the country. And yes, GDP is the state GDP. Number one is obviously Mumbai, because it's got the port, it's the biggest, yeah. That's where Bollywood is. Number two is Tamil Nadu. So.
Yeah, it's actually... This is going to be my follow-up question, like, how does the caste system influence your life?
Hmm.
Because I remember when I was, like, talking to other people from India and they were talking about the caste system, they were saying, for example, how coming from the highest, or, for example, the priests or the Brahmins, doesn't necessarily mean that they're rich, for example.
Most of the Brahmins are not at all rich. And I have my closest friend is a Brahmin, and he's not at all rich.
Yeah.
The first girl I developed interest in was a Brahmin too. But in today's world, I will be very careful about the ideology of the person that I'm going to get involved with. Ideology in every which way. How they raise. What part of their life is governed by money. How much they value money. What is their ideology towards making money.
Yeah.
How will this money enter into their account? All these things are a lingering question in my mind before entering into a relationship. So what was the question again? I think I'm TV.
How does the caste system influence your life?
It's a topic that's completely colonized my mind for the past 6 years. There was some political unrest in my state when the two major political parties and their leaders, who were like absolute dictators, died at the same time. There was political unrest. Nobody knew who's going to be the next, and nobody was charismatic enough to take up the role, and there was absolute chaos. People were getting killed, and this concept of... And then the Indian government is currently right-wing, mm-hmm. and that has upset the whole dynamic. When I was a teenager, in schools, we have to know about the caste system at one point. When you finish your high school and get into university, mm-hmm. your caste will matter, because for the same score that the higher caste person scores, they will get a much lower ranked university. If I think I should say that again one more time.
Yeah. So yeah. Basically, when you get to university, mm-hmm. there is like a test that you have to go do to get.
No, no. You have to take one final examination when you finish high school.
Before you enter.
Yeah, university. That score is going to get you into university.
Yeah.
But the qualifying number. The qualifying score is different for different castes to get into the same university.
Wow.
That is called the reservation system to help the lower caste people and to bring them into universities.
It's
the other way around. It's positive.
Okay, I thought it was like...
It is because of this system.
Got it.
Many people who were deprived of or denied of the right to education, or indirectly they were denied because you've not got money, how will you get into university in the first place? Mm-hmm. So. You're right. Competing with landlords who have acres and acres of land. You have Brahmins too, even though not most of them were rich, we were grazing on this topic, mm-hmm. but they still do have a lot of social capital.
Right.
And that's going to help them a lot, mm-hmm. in landing jobs, in landing recommendations. They do have some kind of notoriety in occupying the top positions and lobbying it for the other Brahmins to come in. If you looked at the cricket team in India, at least when I started watching cricket, a cricket team was... Cricket is a game in India for all our listeners.
Is it popular? It's huge?
Huge. It's like religion in India itself. Like, cricket is like huge. It's like...
Really? I thought it was like a British thing.
No, British invented it, but they're never good at it. I just had to say it, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
They did invent it, and because British brought it to India too, but a cricket team is supposed to have 7 batters and 4 bowlers, and one of them will be a wicketkeeper. But in India, 8 of them, Indian team was not composed of this particular composition. It will usually have 8 Brahmins, 1 Muslim, 1 Sikh, the people who wear turban and stuff. They're from the northern part of India,
that
Punjab.
People mistake for Muslims all the time in
the West. Yeah, true. That is true, because they have the turban on.
But they eat pork.
Oh, yeah, they eat pork. And they're very nice people. Most of the British food comes from Punjab, and they're...
Yeah. They're really peaceful people.
They're peaceful people. Yeah. They're peaceful people. They're very courageous people, too.
And there are 30 million of them, something like that.
Probably. More? I don't know the number, because 30 million is nothing for us.
There's like millions.
Yeah, they are millions of people.
Way more than Jews.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And people don't know them.
Of course.
It's crazy.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. Where were we?
The cricket.
The cricket team will have majority of the players to be Brahmins, 8 of them. One will be a Sikh, one will be a Muslim, and one will be from a lower caste background. This is called tokenism. It's not necessarily good. Tokenism is when you bring in certain people just to tell people that you're not being
like
one-sided.
Pink quotes.
Can you say that again?
The pink quotes. For example, in Israel, they have a certain amount of, there's a percentage. I'm sure there is, in the U.S. as well. There's a certain percentage that needs to go to minorities, for example. The pink quotes are those... Employment space are supposed to be for women.
Is it a certain kind of reservation for the minority people to get those jobs? That's fine, but there is no rule to choose people from Islamic background or Sikh background.
Okay.
They do it just so that people will not accuse them of being Brahmin only. So if somebody says the team is majority Brahmins, they will deny it by saying...
It's not.
Yeah, it's not. Because if you look at the Muslim bowler, he's the opening bowler and things like that. Some kind of eyewash will be... That's their motive. They have ulterior motives in forming the... A cricket team, if it's totally random, it will not take the structure over and over again. If it is a coincidence, it will not happen in this way. So it is engineered to be this way.
So basically, just going back to the example of the university, because I think it's really interesting.
True.
So, for example, if you need 100 to get to that university, if you're a Brahmin, you probably need 110, and if you're from the
let's keep 100 as the standard. You will need anywhere between 99 and 100. If you are a Brahmin, you'll need anywhere between 98, 99 and 100 if you belong to the wealthier background.
Yes.
The landlords.
Yeah.
That is because Brahmin population is very low and
very small.
They're like 3%.
3%
in each state.
In each state.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the landlord communities are much more, because they are the natives of the land.
This is the second caste.
Second richest.
Again?
Which is called, from the Varna system, it's called the Kshatriyas, who are the warriors.
Okay.
There are multiple landlord castes. So in different parts of the state, they call themselves differently.
Okay.
But the collective term will be landlords.
Landlords.
Yeah. Because they own... more humongous amounts of acres of land, and the produce from that itself will keep them running their generations. Next seven generations is what we call in India. So if you look at Indian people, there's a stereotype that they don't spend a lot because they try and save money. And that is, in India, you're not finished when you have enough for yourself. You save for the next generation.
Right.
That's how you provide for the next generation. So wealthier families boast themselves to have wealth for the next 7 generations.
Yeah.
So those are the landlord people.
Are those also the richest, you think?
Most likely, yes.
Yeah.
They are.
It's not even the
wealthiest people, of course.
Okay.
But there are companies that are run by the Brahmins also. There are wealth. So the Brahmin wealth is a spectrum. You will find the priest in a local temple who has no difference to a pauper, because they don't have any kind of capital to support themselves. If the sole breadwinner of the man of the family kind of enters into an accident or something.
Yeah.
So the Brahmin wealth is a spectrum from the ultra rich to the ultra low.
Yeah.
And anywhere in between they exist.
Interesting. So if you are a landlord from that caste, you will need
Not as high. So not as high as the Brahmins, of course. So 99 and 100 is for Brahmins.
Yeah.
Probably I'll give it a 97, 98, 9900 is okay. for the landlords.
Okay.
And then even for the lower most, it will be something around, hovering around 86, 87. If somebody got 87 and a Brahmin got 99, they both go to the same university. And to get 99 and 100 is much more difficult. But the challenges faced by this person, 87 and 88, it's unimaginable. They literally read from street lights, and if they don't have stable income, they're going to face a lot of problems. If they don't have any reserve capital, if something goes wrong in their family, that could ruin their entire family. If one person in their family is affected, mm-hmm. they don't have any kind of wealth or even a small piece of land to sell and put themselves through school. Or if they take loans, there is still a taboo to take loans for education. It's mm-hmm. fully funded. Most of the people go to uni and they are fully funded by their parents. Yeah. And if your parents can't afford that, you're competing with these people who can take extra tuitions to get those scores. For these lower, ultra-lower cost people, paying for school itself is difficult.
Yeah.
Then what about transportation? Mm-hmm. So the people who are wealthier take extra tuitions, they get dropped and picked up by their parents,
right.
or take a taxi or whatever.
Yeah.
So they have the resources to build themselves to score these kind of marks.
Yeah.
But the lower caste people are denied that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, these people also may have to work in the evenings.
Right.
And how are they going to match? So 87, 88 is like unimaginable if you ask me, knowing fully well what are the challenges that they face.
Yeah.
So
it is just a number at the end of the day. But what I want to know is...
I would want the system to continue. The Constitution of India
Who does?
And me personally want this system where we provide opportunities for the lower caste to...
Right.
The system has existed since the independence, right? People who took full use of the system from the lower caste people, let's say who went to school in the 80s, are now in their 50s or 60s of their age. And because of their own efforts, they may have landed good jobs
mm-hmm.
and they may have their own house and they may be able to provide for their next generation of family. But that does not mean that everyone in that caste are liberated now.
Yeah.
So we need to keep the system going until any student, regardless of their social background, gets the same equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Until then, this system has to keep on going.
But I have two questions. Question number one, what would happen
mm-hmm.
if the caste system was abolished today, for example, or tomorrow?
I would say what India would become the superpower. Because we've got the most percentage of young people between the ages of 25 to 45 who work, who are ready to be employed.
Mm-hmm.
If you looked at China, whose population is also comparable to India, they had the one-child policy, which is world famous. But because of that, they do not have... their average age of citizens is higher compared to India.
Yeah.
So they are the number two in economy right now. They are growing only second to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They are growing at a much... higher pace, but it is being projected that the growth of China is only transient and it will reach a particular stage, like the bell curve in mathematics. It will reach a top and then it will go down towards the cusp. And if the caste system were to be abolished, in a world where caste system is abolished, India could be much, much more powerful than it is today.
Is there a possibility to change caste? Or you're born with it?
Oh, that's a great question, Mimi. That's an excellent question because this question is being debated or this point is being made in public forums when public speakers address these topics. You can change your religion, but you can't change your caste.
Never.
Never. How will you change your caste?
If you're born into it, you're going to die.
The same caste.
If you're born a Brahmin, you're
unless you... So there is this thing, but which is not caught on already, but it will, where you can... choose not to have a community certificate, which means you can choose to say, I do not have a caste,
mm-hmm.
and get certified by the government. Because like I mentioned, you will need your caste once you finish your high school and you belong to a particular
university.
To access university.
Yeah.
So you can call yourself no caste and you can apply to the very small number of seats that will be allocated to you. It is a disadvantage for which reason people are not applying to it, but there are more and more number of people who self-identify themselves as, I do not belong to any caste.
So you finish university.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean in terms of opportunities to come from different castes?
Mm. It does not mean much, which is a good news.
Okay.
Because when you're in the university, like I said, I watched this TV show where the HR said they try and figure out through their accents what kind of... But right. It's very uncommon. Like, I will want to present a fair point here. Like, it's not as bad as going from school to university, or the concept of caste system is only relatable or much widely asked during marriages. If someone would want to, yeah.
I was just going to say it.
So if you're looking for a real life example where caste would be a problem or a question, a necessary question, it would be marriage and not jobs or anything.
Because through marriage, you could technically marry up or marry down, so you could technically change caste. But for a job...
But you could always become a Muslim or a Christian and identify
and
yourself.
You could do that as well.
Without any, yeah.
Yeah. But if you don't know that you can identify a person through the last names or through the way they speak,
yeah,
then you wouldn't know where a person,
mm-hmm.
what caste is a person, what yeah. caste a person's from.
So the young people cannot differentiate what caste a person belongs to just through their dialect, the knowledge of the old world.
So do people ask?
Yeah, in weddings. If somebody falls in love with somebody else, the first question people will ask that, what is this person's caste? What is his caste? What is her caste? It's the first question.
Because you cannot marry a different caste.
Yes. Like I said, I'm talking objectively for everybody here.
Right.
It all depends. There are many parents who do not even identify themselves with these nonsense. And they would
A lot of people don't care.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But the majority, we have to worry only about the majority and not the individuals. The 95% of the people will definitely ask that question. Yeah. Yeah.
So you, for example,
mm-hmm.
if you have to date.
Of course.
In India.
Mm-hmm.
How would that work?
Starting to date is entirely different from entering into a marriage. When people begin to date, they're in love. They have absolutely no reason or no thought about the caste at all.
Mm-hmm.
It is when it is time to get married, that's when even the couple themselves will discuss this, what caste you belong to. Because the youngsters don't care about these things.
But isn't dating for marriage? Aren't you dating for marriage?
In India, dating is not as liberal as such. If you're dating somebody or you consider somebody as a potential dating partner, that necessarily means that you are planning a life with them. And I belong to the film
fraternity. It does?
It does mean.
It does?
Yeah, yeah. So casual dating exists in 1 or 2% of India. So I belong to the film fraternity where people are creative people. They get together and things like that can happen.
Yeah.
But we are still talking about the majority.
Yeah.
Where people go to IT and they fall in love and they try to get that into a marriage, but if that does not work out, or if somebody's parents are against it, there's still some people budge and some people don't. It's a 50-50 right now, but the scale is tipping more towards liberation, where people, because they're financially independent, they could form their own life, they could get an apartment, they could live in a different city, no one would know them. So the scales are rapidly tipping. It is not even remotely close to what it was in the 2000s, then in the 2010s, and the 2020s. So if we enter into the next decade, it's almost over. I would say the young people who fall in love and now enter into arranged marriage are the ones that are going to tip the scales towards abolition of caste itself. So when entering into a marriage, if at all given a choice, like the two things my dad ever told me is that failure is a luxury you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
Try and not marry someone with social capital.
Mm.
These are the two things. Because he's far ahead of his own time. There is no chance that... It's not a surprise that these kind of thoughts come out of him.
Yeah.
Because the opposite is what a parent will tell, even today. Like, he's been dead for 10 years now. The opposite is what... Try and marry someone with the social capital is what people would say. Because people still want to marry within their caste. Because if you marry someone within your own caste, you double your net worth overnight. And that is one of the reasons many people try and do it. And if you have enough money, what does it matter if you have a fifth wheel in a car? It's my dad's question. It's useless.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. So if you have enough food, if you have enough to take care of yourself, medication, even the next generation, if you have enough money, what does the extra ₹1 or $1 going to matter to you? So yeah. Why make such an important decision in your life when you can choose for yourself? That is his question. And these thoughts grew into us at a very early age. Even without him, I would never try and get into this, but even without him or any other external influence, I would have ended up the same way, is what I think. Because in a sane world, it's very difficult for me to say that, but still, that is the truth. Even without him or any kind of external influence, I would have ended up the same way. Because in a sane world, these concepts are ridiculous. It makes me sick in my stomach to even think about it and talk about it in this modern world. People are talking about going to Mars. People are talking about finding other places to live. People are talking about the other planets that has water.
Yeah.
People are proving time travel in the future to be true.
But you also went through like a huge period of colonialism where,
very true. But so did many other countries. Israel got its independence in 1948. Look at them.
Yeah, no, fair. But I think it's very different.
Yeah. What observation I would like to make is that despite their challenges, they were able to grow. And you're using your challenges as a reason for not to grow. That is just self-victimization, in my opinion. When you have a choice to grow, you don't take that choice because it is not an easy choice. And then you complain about not having growth and you try and find fault with somebody else because they colonized us. That's not the right approach, is what I'm saying. Every country has its own challenges, but they keep progressing. China is also having a huge problem with their population crisis. Same as India, but they're growing.
I think India's growing.
Not as it could potentially grow. Let's say you can make 10 million a year, 10 million US dollars a year, and you're making only 100,000, and you're complaining because somebody broke your heart or try and find a reason. Say you had a toxic relationship with one of your parents or your teachers were rude to you. And if you find silly reasons to not make the 10 million when you potentially can, and you're making a sliver of what you can, then that is a self-victimization mentality.
Yeah, but also how many people have access to education? You mentioned it before. A lot of the poor people cannot afford going.
True. In India, we mostly do private education, which is a rarity in the Western world. People go to public schools, at least in the US and the Western world. A private school means people are rich.
Mm-hmm.
But because education is such a big thing in India, even poor people try and take loans and exploit themselves into putting their children into school. And they'd be willing to pay any amount of money to get their children into education.
But how recent is this?
The mentality is from the 1980s, I would say.
That's very recent.
Yeah, very recent, true. So these people who went to school in the 80s are just in their 40s and 50s now,
mm-hmm.
taking jobs.
But I would like to ask one last question, because I think I would like to ask many more questions.
Of course.
We're running out of time, but I think... So me, for example, I'm clearly white, European.
And Italian.
Italian, and I come here because this is Taboo with Mimi and it's my podcast, mm-hmm. and I very lightly afford myself to talk about the caste system in India, and this is obviously a safe space and everything, and I come from a place of curiosity and ignorance, of course, willing to learn, honestly, but how do you think people outside of India should approach this topic in a way that can be respectful, I would say, to the population,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't offend people, and basically yes, if you have the answer. I don't know if you have the answer to that, but
in simple terms, you're asking how should the
how should they be approached, because we know it's a very sensitive topic, because mm-hmm. we know it's very taboo,
mm-hmm. very taboo, but it's the easy choice is to stand with the underprivileged, stand with the victims. When I wrote my book, I started with the author's note, where I identified myself as own voices book. Own voices is when you tell your own story and you represent the underprivileged. I would say if it's not very difficult to sympathize with the victims. If at all you want to do something, do that. Or if you would want to not do anything, that's fine too. Because caste system is so complex. And it cannot be fully understood. People can still sympathize with that, but cannot still understand the whole system without being Indian, is my opinion. And this caste system is held together. Some people do not like it when they're accused. Caste system is rooted in religion, which it is. Caste system is held together by religion. when we were talking about Hinduism, the Hinduism is a collective noun, it's a common noun, collective term for multiple different schools of thought. Like yoga that you mentioned was once a religion or a school of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Shaiva, where they worship Shiva, Vaishnava, where they worship Vishnu. They were all different schools of thoughts.
Yeah.
And people who subscribed to one thought did not go to the temples of the other deities.
Yeah.
So the people who worshipped Vishnu literally used to wear bells in their ears. And when somebody praised Shiva or said Om Namah Shivaya, the people who worshipped Vishnu would shake their head left so that the bell would ring and they will not be reminded of, or they will not hear themselves, somebody worshipping Shiva. So they were all considering themselves as opposite religions. And today, they're all collectively held together as one religion. And the book Bhagavad Gita that you read, or it's been promoted as one of the greatest books in the Western world, discusses caste system, supporting it. There is literally a statement where Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnam mayastutam, which means, it's in Sanskrit, I don't speak the language itself, it's as foreign as it is for me, as it is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Chaturvarnam mayastutam means, I created the four castes. Krishna says, I am divisive. I created the four castes. I'm pretty sure somebody who wrote this wanted it that way, and they used Krishna to tell. If somebody, Chaturvarnam mayastutam means, I created the four castes. So what are the people who are in the lower down of the pyramid is going to think? And it says, I classified these four castes, or varnas, varna means color. I classified these four divisions based on your karma, past life actions.
The karma, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really
karma important. Simply means action. And here it says, based on your past karma, based on your past life actions,
right,
you are born into a particular caste, which is nothing but mind control. The,
right,
the Shudras or the slaves are going to think, if Krishna says, Krishna says, then I must, you can't validate it.
Because, but also we have to preface the fact that in Hinduism, what you've done in your past life
is kind of influences your current
influences
life.
Your first life, and what you do in your present life influences your next life, because they believe in reincarnation. But going back to my question, which is how do you think we can respectfully approach the topic as white people?
I don't approach it respectfully. Or maybe that's because I'm Indian, I don't have to, you think. But yeah. I would say you have to be, if you want to do something, there is a difference between approaching for what reason. If you are curious and you want to study, you just study.
Yeah.
And you're going to be disgusted about it, but you're going
to
study.
But if you want to go up to an Indian person and ask, what caste are you from?
From you, I would definitely entertain that question, because you don't have the ulterior motives. That's what that's the same kind of parallels that I drew between learning Hindi and English. Hindi is imposed, English is not imposed. Learning a language which is foreign to me, any language that is not my own mother tongue is foreign to me. Learning a language that is foreign to me is, if it is imposed, then I'm going to say no to that. So based on the motives, based on the ulterior motives, or altruistic motives, I'm going to decide which one I'm going to pick. So if you asked me my caste literally a few minutes ago, I loved that question, only the answer I did not like.
Yeah.
But when you asked it, I was absolutely not offended at all,
mm-hmm,
or had a little bit of resistance to disclose the answer. But when the question is one of the greatest questions you ask all throughout this podcast, because I would want the entire world to take notice. Because we are talking about a few hundred year history between the whites and the blacks and their slavery. But nobody even knows about this horror of an experience for majority of Indians, even today. And it's not known or discussed. We only discuss about how colorful Indian weddings are, but you don't know the complexity in choosing the partners for this colorful wedding. Majority of the time, the hearts of the couple are not as colorful as the weddings. If it's only about indulgence to you, same goes for food. We only talk about Indian food. Literally, there is a movie from a director. He disclosed that he's from a lower caste. And then he made one picturesque of a movie, one monumental movie, where he finishes the final shot of the movie, where there are two coffee cups, transparent cups. And he falls in love with an upper caste girl. That's the and the dad tries to kill him. That's the whole story about. And the director finishes the story beautifully by panning out of the camera, zooming out of the camera, by showing only these two transparent cups of coffee, where even though at the last scene, both the dad and the guy, they come to terms with each other and they sit on the same table, which is a very political statement. Two different caste people sitting on the same table, but still there is a difference which is being portrayed by this coffee, glass of coffee, where the coffee of the father has milk in it and looks brown, and the coffee of the guy is only black coffee, where because he cannot afford milk, and that's been artistically portrayed by this director.
It's a metaphor.
Yes, it's metaphorically portrayed by the director. So even in food, there's so much politics, so much classification. You must have heard of dal. There is an Indian food, which is in South India, we call it sambar.
Yeah.
The amount of vegetables that you have in your sambar and the quantity of sambar that you consume will tell people how wealthy you are. If you have more vegetables, that means you can afford it. And if you look at a sambar and ask, why is this too watery? That means there is so much politics in it. If it is watery, it does not have any vegetables. It means that it's the food of the lower caste people. And we did not even go into the concept of beef, which I am worried about. I've eaten more beef in this island now than I've eaten in entire India because I don't have access to it. And I thoroughly enjoyed eating this cow. I hope I've finished eating at least one cow. So that's what I'm going for. I'm ordering it every day.
Good for you.
Beef is the food of the lower caste people. And it's a huge topic in India. People are getting killed for eating beef. Muslims are getting killed for eating beef.
And the highest caste, they are vegetarian.
They used to be beef eaters, if you looked at their history. And I can tell you, with closing my eyes, you don't have to validate. Are you validated using 100 historians? You'll find the same. You have to put it in the podcast. You can't. You don't have to validate it at all. Their book tells them, their religious text tells them how to choose the cow, how to cut it, what part of the cow goes to whom. And today they're the vegetarians who talk about, who sell their vegetarian life, and they call themselves holy because they're vegetarians. If you claim the book that you've written is very wisdom-filled and knowledgeable, it was written by you when you were eating beef. So go ahead and eat beef. And one of the presidents or vice presidents, Kamala Harris, when she became vice president, it was a rave in India. People were climbing. She's from my city. She's from my background, this and that. She eats beef. There's a picture of her eating beef in Twitter. So be like her. Maybe you'll become her. And if you are a vegetarian and you claim there is some sort of a holiness attached to you, then you live in your own little small world. Beef is a huge concept we did not touch. Because beef is an affordable meat in India, the lower caste people's access towards meat is beef and not chicken or lamb. We call it mutton. Mutton is very expensive. Fish is expensive. Prawn is expensive for them. The lower caste people cannot afford other meat, anything other than the beef.
Interesting.
They eat it every day, by the way.
But is it taboo to talk about eating beef?
In India, we have to talk about the majority. In India, yes, the beef-eating culture is a very taboo topic. Or if you go to a random Indian restaurant in my city, very rarely you'll find beef.
Beef anywhere.
But if you go to the five-star restaurants, you'll find beef because many people from all over the world visit the five-star restaurants.
Oh,
so
interesting.
So that's where. So beef exists only in the highest of the highest or the lowest of the lowest and nowhere in between. But if you, the reason I revere or hold the people of Kerala, the neighboring state, more is because they eat beef in everything.
Yeah.
They eat beef in their snack. Entire state, not just Muslims and Christians, Hindus too. They eat beef.
Enjoy your beef in Bali.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much. I think these are conversations that we need to have.
Yeah. I had to thank you because I didn't have to think twice before talking. And that is because you created taboo with Mimi and not anything else. You didn't, if you had called it anything else, I would have definitely second-guessed myself.
Don't have here.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Of course.
If you want to share your handles with the...
I'll share it to you.
We can put it in the link down below.
Of course.
Below. Otherwise, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
See you next week. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mimi.
Bye-bye.